How old were you when you first started playing piano?
Well, pretty young, really. We had a piano in the house. We had my grandmother's old piano in the house I grew up in, so we were always playing. It was more like a toy. We'd make camps, put drapes or sheets over it and hide things in it and bang away on the keys. So I was always mucking about on the piano, really. But, I suppose I started playing a bit more when I was about 10 or 11.
How did you first become interested in New Orleans music? And you remember the first New Orleans record you heard?
Yeah, I do. I remember hearing the thing that turned me on was my Uncle John came back from New Orleans with a bunch of records, and one of them was Teddy Buckner's West End Blues, and he bought it for my mum as a record, a 78 she'd had when she was a little girl, when she was a teenager. And she'd lost the record. There was West End Blues by Teddy Buckner. Great version of quite a well-known jazz tune, jazz standard. The other one was a Dr. John piano solo on a Danny O'Keefe record that blew my mind. I'd never heard anything like that before. It was the first time I heard New Orleans piano. Just mesmerized. That was the moment right there. That's what I wanted to be able to play.
Really started studying that style of playing. Just try to learn songs off of albums, or how do you approach the New Orleans style?
Well, I was very lucky. My Uncle John came back from New Orleans with a suitcase full of 45s. And then I'd go around to his house, or we'd get together at family parties or whatever, and all the records would come out. And they were always great records, and he had a collection of all sorts of stuff. From New Orleans, all the Professor Longhair stuff, Clarence Henry, and there's Swamp Pop stuff like Jive and Gene and the Jokers. So that's the stuff I heard. I loved it. And it came, of course, every night. When you listen to the records, it was accompanied by stories about New Orleans and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was a very evocative place to hear about. So I thought, man, when I grew up, I want to move to New Orleans. Get some of that.
When did you make your first trip to NOLA?
1980 or 81, somewhere around there.
When did you finally decide to move there?
About 10 minutes after I'd arrived.
Right.
No question whatsoever. So I arrived and went straight to the Maple Leaf Bar from the airport, because a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend happened to be there. Mm-hmm. And I had a little matchbook, you know, with the Maple Leaf Bar with a phone number on it. So I called from the airport, and she was working behind the bar, this girl Fiona. And she said, just come get in a taxi, come to the straight to the Maple Leaf. So we drove and pulled onto Airline Highway, and I was looking in horror. I thought, oh, God, New Orleans, I didn't have no idea New Orleans looked like this. Mm-hmm. This dreadful stretch of road you come into from the airport, used to be back then.
And then I pulled into New Orleans,
and I thought, fuck, I saw a palm tree. So it just suddenly hit me, now I'm in America, and I'm in New Orleans. And the funny thing was that on the way to the Maple Leaf Bar, I didn't know where the Maple Leaf Bar was, I had no idea where we were going, how long it was going to take. But at one point, the car turned and went past this bar called Jimmy's, and there was a sign that said, tonight, Huey Piano Smith and the Clowns. And I nearly told the taxi driver to stop right there, just let me out here. I couldn't believe I was driving. It was a Huey Smith and the Clowns gig. It's just like a name I'd heard on radio shows and read about on the back of record sleeves. But I went to the Maple Leaf, and Earl King was playing. My introduction to New Orleans was the Maple Leaf Bar, and Earl King playing in the background. Yeah, it's great.
There's something about the Leaf that place is just so New Orleans, you know?
Well, it was a great bar to end up in. I was very, very lucky. because I ended up living around the back, or living next door to the Maple Leaf, and then I got hired to work there to paint the outside of the building, and I just needed a job just to be able to stay, so it was perfect for me. So I was in the Maple Leaf every day and every night, got to see all the bands every night for free. Yeah, it was fantastic. And then there was another club right across the street called Jed's. Mm-hmm. We could see Clifton Chenier or the Neville Brothers, and the Meters used to sound check in there and rehearse. So that was all going on all the time.
Where did you play your first gig in NOLA?
The very first gig was at the Maple Leaf Bar. Uh-huh. John Rankin, a great guitar player, mm-hmm, from New Orleans here, and he invited me to sit in on Dixie Chicken. But that was the first time I ever got up and played in New Orleans. And I remember because it was in a really difficult key for me at the time. It was in E, which is a nightmare for a piano player. And I started playing in horror when I realized what key it was in. So yes, the house I lived in had an old piano in it. So when I arrived in New Orleans, I started playing, getting stuck into the piano.
Was your first visit to New Orleans your first time in the U.S. as well?
Yeah.
Nice.
Made a connection in New York and then flew down and arrived in New Orleans. Yeah, it was great. And it still is great. I've been here for 30 years now.
Nice.
I was coming for a couple of weeks. 30 years later, I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. How do you try to work that New Orleans piano sound into your own song and your own playing?
Well, because I started playing piano with an interest in that New Orleans style. That's kind of always what I've done. So it comes out as sort of my default mode, if you like. piano playing.
Mm-hmm.
As a new musician, you have to play different sorts of things as well. But when I sit down, and when I sit down just playing for myself, it's New Orleans. That's my kind of default mode. So everything I do sort of comes out of that, really. Well, a lot of it, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of soak it all up, and then it comes out again in some shape, form, or fashion. But I sort of think New Orleans.
Do you find yourself listening to New Orleans music every day?
No, not really. No. I've got a little studio in my house. I'm in there just doing, working on stuff most of the time. If you're living here, you just hear it. It just comes. You don't have to sit in your front room and listen to records of it. You just hear it when you're driving down the street.
Right.
When you get in your car and put the radio on. Music and the second line parade. So there's music all the time. There's a second line on Sunday a few days ago. We went to have the Tremé brass band playing in the street all the way through the French Quarter. You know, you're surrounded by it here, so you don't really have to. I don't find I sit down and listen to it more than any other style. I listen to a lot of reggae, actually.
Would you ever see yourself cutting a reggae album?
Well, I'm actually working on a rock steady kind of arrangement of an Alan Toussaint tune at the moment. It's an old song called Poor Boy Got to Move. Sounds very much like The Impression, and made at a time when Jamaican bands were trying to sound like The Impressions too, and that's where all the Jamaican vocal trio groups came from. That's the style I really like. There was an era called rock steady before it kind of turned into roots reggae.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love playing that stuff. I love it. Yeah, I'd love to do a reggae album one day. I kind of, that's sort of where I grew up on, really, in England, in the 70s, late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a lot of really good reggae bands, mm-hmm. English reggae bands and bands over from Jamaica too.
What's some of your favorite shows you saw?
Best one, I think, for me, I was very lucky to see Culture playing at the Rainbow in London in November of 1976. I remember it quite vividly because their record, the 2-7 Clash, had just been released on the Joe Gibbs label. That's a great record, and there was a portentous kind of side to the whole event because the record was called 2-7 Clash. Alluding to a Haile Selassie speech where he said that everything was going to go off when the 2-7s clashed, so everyone thought that meant 1977.
Uh-huh.
So all the Rastas were out in full force in November 1976, and then Culture here from Jamaica. Uh-huh. But the revolutionaries back in the month. Oh, that was great.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah, that was a good one. There's loads of them. We used to go see loads of reggae bands. Yeah, that's kind of what I grew up on.
New Orleans music and Jamaica have always been tied together.
Very close, yeah, very close. Yeah, if you listen to Be My Guest, that's the Fats Domino tune, the first sort of ska tune, really.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge hit in Jamaica, and when he toured in Jamaica, all the bands had to play that tune. It sounds like a Jamaican tune.
You tour all over the world now. What's some of your favorite places to play?
Well, I always get excited when I'm going somewhere that I haven't been to before. It's one of my favorite places, and that's the thrill. Playing anywhere, really, if the gig's good and the audience is good and the sound's good. Well, I like playing in Spain because I love Spain.
Mm-hmm.
The hot parts of Europe, for me, actually very exotic at the moment. I think more so because I've been living over this side of the Atlantic for so long.
Uh-huh.
That's probably what that is. But yeah, no, anyway, I enjoy traveling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to go somewhere. I like to go places that are really different from here. If I'm going to go somewhere, I want it to be a nice traveling experience. So a different language is always good.
What have been some of your favorite moments on stage in NOLA?
The first real absolute monster gentleman gig at Maple Leaf a few years ago. That was pretty special. There have been loads of great gigs. All the gigs have to be good, you know, when you're doing this regularly. So there's loads of great moments, really. I don't know if any in particular stand out. Just the thrill of playing with alongside people who you really admire, like guys like Earl King and Spook Zieglin and Johnny Adams, also Washington, all the characters like Ernie Kader and Jesse Hill. Tommy Ridgely was a great guy. I got to know all those guys better than others, some not so well, but we got to play together. So it was lovely to be able to sort of learn firsthand from the guys that really invented it and all that stuff, some of whom are still inventing it. Lots of magic moments. Mm-hmm. The patinas with Earl King, the patinas with Snooks Evelyn.
What do you love about playing with Snooks?
I like Snooks because he really dug in.
Mm-hmm.
He really got stuck into it. And with a good rhythm section, it would be absolutely slamming. I got to play with Snooks with some really great rhythm sections, George Porter and Kenneth Evans. And then I did a bunch of gigs with him with Irving Charles and Smokey Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And then some stuff we did, gigs we did with him with the Monster Gent, with Jesse Alexander and Cornell Williams. Just to be with Snooks with a great rhythm section, killing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We had a big book of songs, and there were some songs you would guarantee you'd probably play. But there were always a few sort of that came at you from the, like a curveball. I mean, wow, you just have to kind of go along with it. But no, it was great to play with. Yeah, it was a little bit unpredictable. That was part of the fun, really.
Nice.
There was never, I mean, for example, there was never a list of songs you're going to play that night. There was never a rehearsal or anything like that.
you just show up and do it? Yeah.
No, yeah, you get on the stage and he goes, like, E-flat, y'all. we just start playing a groove and you go, right, here we go. Everyone jumps in and think, that was actually where it's going. But they kind of do, because, you know, that music follows a sort of logic. And it was fun, yeah, you always fly by the seat of your pants, but it was great music.
What New Orleans people would you like to work with that you haven't yet?
That's a really good question. I'm sure there are. You know, it's funny, when you do this for a living, you have to make most of your daily bread by going out there on the road and doing gigs. And for the last 15 years, I've been on tour pretty much constantly with Taj Mahal and Bonnie Raitt and doing my thing as well, and then John Scofield. So when I do come home, I don't really go out all that much, unless it's something special. I actually, my idea of being home is staying indoors and watching the television, reading books and chilling out. So I'm probably, to be honest with you, a little bit out of touch with some of the stuff that's going on around town. I mean, there's so much music here, it's very hard to keep up with everything. I don't know, I'm sure there's some great people out there it'd be fun to work with. I'm not quite sure who yet.
How'd you first meet Bonnie Raitt? How'd that come together?
We met in the studio playing on a Taj Mahal record, and she was going to come in and sing on a track. So we met then. Then met again on a B.B. King record. Same thing, she was coming in to sing on a B.B. record, and I was playing in the band. And she came down, I was playing on a blues cruise with Taj Mahal, and we stopped off on St. Croix. They had a blues festival there. And Bonnie came down to play at that, so we backed her up then. And so the next time we met was at the Summer Wars thing in Los Angeles. It was a great, amazing lineup of musicians. A lot of them, it was John Lee Hooker, Ike Turner, Dr. John. I can't remember, loads of those great people. She was there, and then she asked me if I wanted to come play piano in her band. She was putting a new band together. At the time, I didn't think I was going to be able to do it, because I was just making a record for Virgin called Moonburn, and it was going to be kind of tough to try and do both those things. But I joined her band. That's how I met her, just in stages, different places. Always with great people, great bands. And I started playing with her, and it was great. Did that for about 10 years.
How does your songwriting process work?
I don't know that there's one particular technique that applies to songwriting personally. It's a little bit different. You just play a bunch and get little ideas happen by accident, a symphony or something. A chord progression will suggest a melody, and then the melody will suggest a little lyric, which might be the hook. And then you can, maybe from the, whatever that hook is, you can extrapolate some kind of story, dream up some kind of scenario for a song, and then you might have one or two other ideas, and it just, little bit gets put together piece by piece, like a puzzle, really. Subject to much revision afterwards. Only by playing them on the gigs, really, they eventually settle down, see exactly what the song needs to do. I think it's to write songs, and when I say songs, I'm thinking of arrangements as well. They always sort of come together. It's a long, slow process. Gradually refine the material until it settles down, so you've got it right. It can take a long time. But sometimes it happens really quickly. So there's nothing exact science. There's no reality to say, oh, you just do this and that.
Right. When you're approaching a cover song, how do you try to make it your own?
That's a good question. I think you have to just rely on inspiration for that. I think if you listen to, if you listen to a great deal of music, and you play a great deal of music, amass a little stockpile of ideas and draw on from time to time, then you just let your imagination run free and come up with an idea that would suit the way the melody goes and, you know, the way you could change the groove up. So, yes, I must just imagine the kind of feel that you want. I mean, I know it always sounds very vague, but it is a kind of vague process. Just come up with some ideas that work. I think it's great playing covers. I think it's nice to kind of mix it up, do some original stuff, and then do some other people's tunes too. Lots of great songs out there. And there are occasions where I just get a lot of pleasure from just playing the song the way I always heard it on a record and always really liked it. There's nothing wrong with doing that. It'd be great fun. It's nice if you can take something and then introduce something different, and in the process kind of expand the whole picture a little bit. So I do like to try and change them up. But that's, once again, when, you know, these songs always evolve. So you start playing something on a gig one night, and after a couple of weeks on a tour, it might have morphed into something completely different. So the original root idea is still present, but it's just gone off in a different direction. We apply the same lyrics and the hooks and all that sort of stuff. The chords might be different underneath. All the groove might be changed.
What are some of your favorite covers to play?
Well, I always loved playing Tipitina. That was one of the first things I tried to learn on the piano. Basically, the root of everything I played. Just the way that, you know, Professor Long here, Dr. John, slamming solo version of it. That's the funky basis of everything.
What advice would you have for pianos just starting out?
Take it slowly. Make sure it stays fun. Play, you know, stuff, the simple songs that you really like. Well, I always, if anyone wants to learn piano, the first thing I always show them is Lean On Me, that Bill Withers tune. It's a great tune. It's the easiest thing in the world to play. So people like R&B or whatever, more fancy having to go on the piano, it's always a good one to start with. Yeah, keep it simple, keep it fun.